Will Our Future Be Like? The title of this series. I've endeavored to bring it in such a way that the new ones will understand it as well as the experienced ones. Revelation chapter 12, if you'll turn there, please. See how fast you can find it. They tell me it's at the end of the book. What will our environment be like before we are cut up out of the midst, out-translated, snatched up, out of the midst be suddenly gone, raptured? Revelation chapter 12, verse 1. And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. Now the Greek word that we've translated wonder here is really means sign. There appeared a sign in heaven. You know what a sign is? A sign is to point you towards something. Now we see that this sign, a woman was a sign. This woman. What is a woman? A woman is a part of Adam taken from his side. But this is not a literal female, for this woman is clothed with the sun and stands upon the moon and has 12 stars on her head. This woman is a sign of that which this woman points to. That is, this is a pictorial vision that John saw in which this woman represents something of which she is a fitting symbol. This woman didn't come out of the side of the first literal Adam. Hence, she is not a literal woman. But rather, she came out of the spirit-pierced side of the last spiritual Adam, Christ, which means she is the church of Jesus Christ that came because he died for our sins, because he was punctured by the spear that brought death. Out of his side flowed blood and water. She is the church built upon the foundation of Jesus Christ. The Bible says that a man and a woman shall become one flesh in marriage, that this is a great mystery, but he speaks concerning Christ and the church. He uses the woman as a type of the church. This woman is clothed with the light, the righteousness and truth of Jesus. All right, verse 2. We're talking about what our environment is going to be like in the future. I'm proving it to you from the scripture. We see a woman, which is a church. Okay, we have to get the time element in here too. And she, being with child, cried, travailing in birth, and pain to be delivered. And there appeared another sign in heaven. And behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns, which means that the 10 horns are not all on one head. And I'll give you advance information, so all 10 horns are on the 7th head. And 7 crowns on his heads. He's got 7 heads, each head has a crown on it. And the 7th head, besides having a crown, has 10 horns. And his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven and did cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered, for to devour her child as soon as it was born. Now, this woman is visible. She is visible. Therefore, she is the visible church. The dragon can see her. He knows where she is. He knows who she is. He stands in sight of the woman, the Greek says. We say he stands before the woman. The Greek is he stands in sight of the woman. He's not far off. He's watching her. He is waiting for his chance. He is not trying to destroy the woman. He is not trying to destroy the church for only one reason. He knows he can't. Because God has already said that the gates of the councils of hell shall not prevail against the church. Matthew 16:18. But he knows that he can pick off saints and the church will go on. And so he is endeavoring to pick off the saints of God, although he knows he can't get rid of the woman. The woman represents the church itself. Her children are the people that are in the church. There's the man-child, and there's the remnant. He cannot get rid of the church, but he can get rid of people in the church. If you get rid of all the people, you'd have no church. But if there's any people left, you still got the church. Now, he hopes, however, to devour her offspring that is a result of God's seed in her. Because she's married to God, and he has put, because of love with to her, he has put a life-giving miracle seed in her that will grow up to be a company of people. A full-grown man, son. A child that'll come out as full-grown, full man. Full armored up, if you will. And this child is invisible. He cannot see her. It's a product of the woman. It's the invisible church that is in the womb of the visible. And so in that church over there, there's a nucleus of five saints. They are praying. They are worshiping. They are more spiritual than everybody else in that church. The church is somewhat dead and mechanical, but they have to live with it, they think, and they're there, and they're working, but they're the workers, they're the witnesses, they're the teachers, they're the ones who are doing something. Over in this church, there's 150. Over in that one, there might be 500. In that one, there may be none. Those individuals make up the invisible body that God's working with. But they're now having to be in the womb of the entire church, which is holding them back, and which they don't have the freedom, and so forth. Someday, they are going to separate themselves from the church, the visible church, and going to be an individual collected body that are all alike as a newly developed child by the Spirit of God out of his, because of his love for the woman. He's brought forth from the church this group of this man-child company that is like Jesus, who is the great man-child, son. They'll be members of his body, not I but Christ, coming forth, and will collect into a separate individual body. And Satan wants to get that group. And he's hoping that he will be able to destroy that thing that comes out, even though he knows he can't stop the church. In fact, he plans to use the church to enhance himself during the tribulation period and give honor unto himself and use it to dupe people. Because you always can dupe people better by religion than without religion. There's a cohesiveness in religion in which you can hold them together. Now, he knows that to throw down choice saints from their heavenly citizenship, he must work subtly. He must not let them see his strategy. So while he, as the dragon, breathes fire and smoke to frighten them and get their attention, he strikes them, not with his teeth, which they're watching, sword of faith held up, the shield of faith held up, the sword of the Spirit ready, watching him. He breathes, his head is moving around, he's roaring, fire rolling out, and we're here watching, and he reaches around with his tail, and what's the scripture say? He draws a third of the luminaries from heaven with his tail, not with his head. He came in from behind with something subtle. Now, it can be a lot of things. It can be 25, 50, 100 strokes with a tail. Each stroke can be different. This is geared for these charismatics to whip them down to old Rome, bring them back to Rome. This one will bring that group into fanaticism. That swipe will bring him into legalism. This will come in from behind and take him out into this little new movement he's got that will take him off of the beaten track. This one will cause them to fall because of the new attitude of accusations and rebellions and whatever, Laodicea. And whatever he's doing, he's coming in, this may not be it, but he's coming in behind the scenes to do something that you're not watching, and the people don't notice they've got a problem because they are still watching the main doctrines, the main things, and so they feel like they're all right because they're watching his mouth, and he gets them with a tail. He comes in from behind. Whatever that means and whatever it is, that's what he's using, and they're falling. And or will fall. Now, he cast them from the heavenlies in Christ Jesus down to the devil's domain and to the earth, in verses 3 and 4, down to the earth. Now, once this type of child is born, however, this happens after he casts down these tails. He's born afterwards. So this kind of child, when it's born, nothing but an all-out devouring will stop it. Hence, this is not going to be some little subtle thing from behind. That's what's happening now. That's what's happening up till this time, is he's working through a lot of different things that are tricking the saints, through a lot of different movements and things and ideologies and whatever. But this is going to be all-out war, because this man-child will know his devices, will be in the spirit, and have spiritual strength and illumination, be forewarned by God, and all-out war. So we see in chapter 13, verse 7, speaking of this beast, and it was given to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. You see, this is all out war. But, and in fact, this is why this man-child in chapter 12, verse 5, is caught up. She brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up to God in his throne. The woman, the church, was still here. The church went out into the wilderness, and the remnant of her seed, those that didn't get caught up, those that were not raptured, the remnant of her seed, those that, the rest of her children, remained during the tribulation period, which it says here is 1,260 days, or 3.5 years. It tells us very clearly. This is why he's caught up, because if it's not, the all-out war is going to knock it down. In other words, it's coming out through world government, because world government, which I'll prove to you in a minute, will already be in force at this time. Legislation through the government. All-out war through legislation by the liberals and a number of other things. And when I get through with you, if you allow me to know how I mean this, with enough times coming with this, some of you who haven't already recapitulated, that's the right word, haven't surrendered concerning civil rights movements and a few other things, and you're bothered by, if you're bothered by it, you are going to finally see what I'm getting at, because you're going to see what they're getting at. You see, we have tended to believe what we've been told by the liberal press so much, and what's being said rather than what they're doing. And the strange thing is, you're putting all your hope in a dead, dead, dead church. Because that's where all these movements are coming from, is the dead church that is racial, that is talking about politics, racism, giving money to the Black Panthers and Angela Davis and the communist movement, that's doing the thug in the aisles and striptease and spice cake and champagne for communion, and that is not moving with God. That's where the movement is coming from, that church. It's not coming from the Pentecostals and the Nazarenes and the Mission Covenant, and it's not coming from the Southern Methodists, and it's not coming from the moral majority. It's all coming from the other. And if you believe what they say and all that comes from that class of people and from the sinners, and you really believe them and think they got a good thing, then that means these evangelicals don't know what they're doing, and we've missed it, God, and they've got more of God and the illumination than we do. And somehow you're going to have to get it. See, that's the problem with reading this junk you get all the time from the news media that's so controlled and lying to you constantly, 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 that pretty soon you get believing it. It's the very thing that made the Nazi army, got the Nazi youth and continually taught them until they had them in the grip of their hand and believed it. The old people in Germany couldn't be persuaded. I mean, they'd been around too long. They had to get the new ones up, bring them up so they knew nothing else but the Nazi youth movement. Then they believed it. They even taught them that Adolf Hitler was a person of Jesus. Jesus Christ was come in the person of Adolf Hitler. You couldn't pawn that off on the old German Lutherans. But the new ones coming up, you could feed them from the cradle to the grave and you can teach them anything. And those that haven't given in yet and can't see and get upset if I say certain things, you're going to come to find out I know what I'm talking about. The illumination is on this side, not on that side. And this is only a means to an end, even though it does feather your nest in the process. There's a lot of things feathering your nest in the process. I mean, you may be on Social Security and don't deserve it. It's nice to have the money. But that doesn't mean it's right. It's bankrupting the system. We get awful subjective sometimes because we're benefiting and fail to see the truth. Is Ron Myrick in the hill? Is he gone? What happens if we keep on going for a while? Are the mothers and children in trouble in the Sunday school? He doesn't know me. Well, we'll go a little while and take a break. Okay. And then we'll take a break, worship a bit, and come back and finish up a little bit. We won't get it all done today. We'll continue on for a few weeks on this subject, if you don't mind sticking with me. Okay, now. Who is this dragon? Chapter 12 and verse 9 tells us. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. This is the devil. Satan is his name. But what form is he in? He is the old serpent, verse 9. But he does not come in the form of a serpent. He comes in the form of a dragon with seven heads, verse 3. He is not a literal dragon, for there is no such thing. But even as the woman is a sign, so the dragon is a sign. Now let's look at Revelation 17, verse 7. And the angel said unto me, after watching this vision, Wherefore didst thou marvel? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman, and of the beast which carrieth her, which hath the seven heads and the ten horns. The beast that thou sawest was. Now we're seeing, a later revelation of it here in chapter 17 than we did in verse 13 and we did in verse 12. The beast that thou sawest was, that is, he was at the time of chapter 12, and he is not at the early part of chapter 13, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit. He shall come from the very forces of hell and shall go into perdition. And so he's going to come back again. And they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not, yet is. He's back alive again, as we see in chapter 13, verse 4. And here is the mind which hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth. Now, what are the seven mountains? Can one sit on seven mountains? No, even as the woman was clothed with the sun is a sign, so the woman with a cup of abominations, which is what we'll see here in a minute. Let's turn to that right now in the same chapter 17, verse 3. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman. She was in the spirit. In a vision, he saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of the names of blasphemy, having seven heads, ten horns, same beast, And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color, decked with gold, precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand, full of the abominations and filthiness of her fornication. You're beginning to see some of this today out here. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery. Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots, the abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Now, this is a different woman than we saw in chapter 12. This is a harlot woman. This woman is not true to God in love and worship. She is the harlot church. She is false religion, which originated by the councils of hell. And as a matter of fact, she is the reason behind every world government. Because every world empire that's ever existed has had a religion that has held it together. And that's why you see her riding on the beast. She's riding on the beast. When you ride a horse, you're the boss, not the horse. That is, if you're really riding it. She's riding this beast. She's the one who controls it. False religions. Now, what are the seven mountains? Even as this woman clothed with the sun is a sign, so the woman with a cup of abominations is a sign. And so the seven mountains are signs, even as the sun and moon were signs. A mountain, typologically in Scripture, represents a great obstacle, or nation, or kingdom, or power. Let me read you a few scriptures to support that. Jeremiah 51, verses 24 and 25. And I will render unto Babylon and to all the inhabitants of Chaldea all the evil that they have done in Zion in your sight, saith the Lord. Behold, I am against thee, O destroying mountain, saith the Lord, which destroyeth all the earth. He calls Babylon a destroying mountain, a great force. Daniel 2, verses 34 and 35. Thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image on his feet, that were of iron and clay, and brake into pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, the gold, broken to pieces together. That is the image, which was a picture of four different world governments, empires, were broken and became as the chaff of the summer threshing floors. This was last days. And the wind carried them away so that no place was found for them. And the stone that smote the image, that's Jesus Christ, he smote on his feet on Rome when he was born, became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. That's in the millennium and in the gospel age before the millennium. His spiritual kingdom is going to fill the whole earth, and it will be an actual kingdom, visible kingdom in the millennium. So we see here that Christianity is the mountain. Amos 6:1, woe unto them that are at ease in Zion and trust in the mountain of Samaria, which are named chief of the nations to whom the house of Israel came. He's not talking about trusting in a rock and dirt hill someplace, but in the power. Zechariah 4, verses 6 and 7. Then he answered and spake unto me, saying, this is the word of the Lord unto Zerubbabel, saying, not by might, nor by power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord of hosts. Who art thou, O great mountain? Before Zerubbabel thou shalt become a plain. He's not saying I'm going to come out and take a bunch of shovels and shovel a mountain down. He's talking about a great power out here of the devil that the Spirit of the Lord is going to level. Matthew 17:20, and Jesus said unto them, because of your unbelief, for verily I say unto you, if you have faith as a grain of mustard seed, you shall say unto this mountain, remove hence to yonder place, and it shall remove, and nothing shall be impossible with you. He's not trying to get you to around moving Mount St. Helens, Mount Rainier, and have the saints moving mountains around geographically. He's talking about powers that are standing in the way of the people of God. So here, these seven heads are seven mountains. You know what the beast is. You've already seen it. It's the devil in the force, invisibility in this earth. And each head is a mountain. Now, notice in Revelation 17:10 that each mountain has a king over it. And there are seven kings. Five are fallen, one is, and the other is not yet come. When he cometh, he must continue a short space. There are seven kings. Seven heads, seven kings. Each head had a crown, remember? That means there's a king over it. Now, So here, each mountain represents not just a nation, but a whole kingdom. Because there's a king over it. It's a kingdom. Notice also, like the British Empire, see, it was a kingdom. It had many nations under it, many different countries and so forth all over the world under it. Notice also that each head does not exist concurrently with the others. One is not yet come, it says. That means future. One is. That means present. Five are fallen. That means they're past. And therefore, they're one at a time, like the book of Daniel tells us, one at a time. These are all, each one is the world kingdom that exists at that time. Five are fallen. Let's count the world kingdoms. The Egyptian Empire, the Assyrian Empire, the Babylonian Empire, the Medo-Persian Empire, the Greece Empire. Five are fallen. And one is, at the time of the writing, the Roman Empire. And one is yet to come. There has been no world empire since Rome fell until the present. So it has yet to come. So it's got to be another kingdom, and it's got to be another world kingdom, and that means it has to be the last kingdom upon earth that the Bible prophesies of under the Antichrist and the false prophet. Now, there's been several attempts during history to make a world kingdom. Muhammad tried it in the 7th century. The devil used him for the Islamic religion. Genghis Khan tried it in the 8th century for Mongolia, for the Chinese religion. Charlemagne tried it in the 13th century for the Catholic religion. Napoleon tried it in the 19th century for atheism. Hitler tried it in the 20th century for Nazism, in which he was telling them that he was Jesus Christ. And now communism is trying it for atheism under Lenin and Marx and Stalin and Mao and so forth. Now, the move is on for world government. We shall live to see world government. You shall live in world government. The proof of it is in chapter 12. Let's go back and look at it. Let's look. This woman was travailing with a child. And before the child was born, which is verse 5, and caught up, we find that verse 3 says that there is a dragon, red dragon, same color it was in verse 17, and it's got 7 heads and 10 horns. It's got how many heads? 7. That includes the last day Antichrist world government. While the man-child is still in the womb of the church, which gives you a time key and positive proof that we shall live under world government. Doesn't that make you want to be sure you're right with God? The 7th head has come into being. Now, what shall have first world government? One, communism, threatening the world, taking over more and more and more. Have you ever heard better red than dead? How many have heard that expression? We haven't been, our back isn't even up against the wall, and they're already talking about surrender. Better red than dead means surrender to communism. Even talking about it in advance. And they have said we'll run up the red flag in America. They've already said we'll take the entire earth. Have they not? And haven't they taken a great part of it? And aren't nations getting awful conciliatory all of a sudden after they get more and more power and backing down? What's going to happen with the next decade of growth in the Soviet Union and so forth? Now do you see why the capitalists that communism hates? Don't you know communism hates capitalism? How many know that? How many know that capitalism has been feeding communism? Isn't that strange to build up a force that hates you and has admitted it's going to destroy you? Isn't that an enigma if you ever heard one? Why have we been making all the dumb decisions and treaties that benefit communism? Don't you get the impression over the last 20 years that we're consistently making policies that help communism? How many get that opinion? Now, don't these people out here know about communism? Nixon warned us about communism. Kennedy warned us about communism. I mean, they all know about communism. So why are we doing this? You see, they are dumb like a fox. They're not stupid decisions. They're rather treasonous decisions for a purpose. They want a greater piece of the pie. Let's look at some of the decisions for communism real quickly. One, we allowed Russians to take Berlin. We held back our forces and let them come in and take over Germany, take over, take half of Germany, take over Berlin, and then divide up with them, and that enabled them to reach out and get the Balkan states and other things, take all the German scientists and take them back to Russia and all of this. We allowed this in spite of the fact that Churchill said, if you do that, then you're going to have trouble with Russia, et cetera, et cetera. In spite of the fact that Patton said, to fight Russia anyway one of these days, and then he got bumped off, and we divided up with Russia the Japanese fleet. They didn't fight Japan. They just said they were going to come in and help us. We gave Russia the favored nation status. Would you really favor them? Why should we favor them? I would think Canada ought to get the favored nation status. We canceled the World War II debt of $30 billion, which would be worth about $120 billion now, and the Marshall Plan was called. We gave them grain on credit when they already owed us enormous bills and had plenty of money to put in more military and were building big bases up in the Arctic. Gave them on credit when they got plenty of money to build military forces and make military excursions. Even though we had to pay more for bread, we gave it to them cheaper, and some of that bread, grain, was used to make poisonous gases and so forth. We purposely had a no-win war in Korea, according to the testimony of General MacArthur, who said I could win in Korea anytime I wanted, and proved it, and was stopped by the State Department, was ordered by the State Department, was stopped, was not allowed to go beyond the 38th parallel. Even when they west waved past, they made him come back. I can tell you the whole story of the thing. I've done it before. He could win anytime he wanted. He couldn't bomb those. All planes could not follow him back across that line. They could not take the Incheon Reservoir. They could not bomb the bridges there at the Yellow River. They could not bomb certain trucks on certain roads. They could not do this. In fact, they asked him to give up when they're down on the Incheon Peninsula. And General MacArthur called Truman in the middle of the night and said, I want to know one thing. Am I supposed to win the war or lose it? Because they told him to pull out, go to Japan, and let all the American forces be taken by the communists. That's what he was ordered to do by the State Department. He was so mad. And they said, and Truman said in the middle of the night, Truman says, you're supposed to win the war. And he said, that's all I want to know. And he slammed the phone down, and he launched an invasion up. He planned an invasion real quickly. And he had to give it to the State Department, and they did everything they could to squash the invasion. No, you can't do it. It won't work. They'll see you coming. The tide is going to be, as you get a low tide, you only got so many, 23 hours to get out of the harbor, and this and this and this. He was a general, not them. And he did it anyway, caught him completely by surprise, routed him, drove him, flew back into North Korea, and they yelled, stop, 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 don't drive him any further. And he says, here they come, the hordes are building up. I got to bomb these 100 bridges across the Yellow River. They said, no, you can't bomb them. They did every single thing. Truman finally fired him. He asked Eisenhower, what would you have done under the circumstances? And Eisenhower said, I would have bombed the bridges and made sure they accepted my resignation. Because he tried to resign, and they wouldn't let him resign at first. They said, State Department came back and said, you can bomb the bridges only on your side. And he asked General LeMay, what does that mean? And he said, that means you don't bomb the bridges, because there's no way of bombing the bridges on your side only. In other words, that was their way of saying you can't do it without appearing treasonous. No-win wars in Vietnam. Even Eleanor Roosevelt said, we are going to have to learn to get along with no-win wars. Although MacArthur said there is no substitute for victory. We purposely did not win in Vietnam. That was absolutely on purpose. We could have whipped them in a week. And that's the truth. That's the truth. We couldn't bomb these rivers. You couldn't go by the land. You couldn't do this. You couldn't do that. They were hamstrung every place along the way. They never needed to send an American in. As far as I'm concerned, if you let people accuse and attack me all they want, I would have done it differently. I would have said, send the naval fleet over there. Send out all your fleet. Tell them, you pull out. You've got 7 days to pull out or else. And I pulled out in 7 days. You had every military installation at once with a small, clean, 1 megaton atomic artillery. Atomic bomb. They have no way to protect themselves. They had no missiles. They had no way to reach the United States. They had no way to do anything to us. And they were clean installation bombs. They can get pulled back if they want to. It's their fault if they don't. Hit every military installation, wipe out the entire military in 1 day, one strike, and that they would all be over with. You'd have a 1 day war. Now, if Israel can defeat Egypt down there in a 5 day war, and we can't beat little Vietnam after 11 years, there's something wrong someplace. This is a pure, pure refusal to win because they want to get people sick and tired of war, bankrupt the United States, let the communists take over, and get you so you want to burn draft cards, and nobody will ever go out again and ever want the United States to ever protect against communism, so communism takes the globe without Americans ever touching them. That was the whole idea of the whole thing. We disarmed a third of the United States by McNamara under Kennedy. We allowed the invasion of Cuba to falter. Purposely let them, those men, die on the beaches there by pulling back air support at the last minute. Allowed the United States intelligence ship to be captured there in Korea. We called the aircraft back that were headed for them to rescue them, could easily have done it. Called them back by a high State Department. Now, I preached on this a while back. If you were here, you got the information. Allowed the communist governments and the agents in the United States, we allowed them to exist all the time in the United States. They almost took over Brazil. They had the Navy. They had infiltrated the Air Force. They had infiltrated the government. But they had a nominal Christian Democrat type as the head of the Brazilian army. He made a coup and took over and banned communism from Brazil. I have talked to American Pentecostal missionaries down there. They come back and they say the Brazilians are saying, I don't see why you people allow communism. Gus Hall to run for, to be a president of the Communist Party in America and stand on the corners and say, daily worker, and vote for the Communist Party for president. Why do you allow them? Don't you understand they're trying to destroy you? They've already told you they almost took over our country. They're a creeping cancer. What's the matter with you Americans? We're standing here dumb. FBI is allowed to keep track of them. We can't do a thing about it. Not if I were in control. Treason is treason. We gave the Panama Canal away. Told that pro-communist down there in Panama. We loan money to communist countries. Continually do so. Build great big phosphate companies in Russia because they have big grain problems. No short of fertilizer. So we build phosphate countries. We're already short of phosphate. Most of it comes from Florida. We build it in that country. Big, huge plants for them. I wouldn't help enemies destroy me. Our military people have already said they have such grain problems. If they ever started a war, they would run flat out because of the food and the problems. And we go help them out. They blackened Senator McCarthy, who was at that time very careful, documented his cases, made sure he had the goods on the communists before he fingered them. They were arrested by the FBI, found guilty by the FBI, arrested, brought to the Supreme Court, found guilty, and like Rosenthal and Hess and others, to be found guilty. And yet they blackened Senator McCarthy. Blackened Senator McCarthy, made movies of him, made him sound like he was just a rabble rouser, wildly accusing and guessing. Blackened the man to save America who was careful. He knew what he was doing. He was not the man they'd been portraying him to be. I lived at that time, and I know what was happening. People were convicted.
Eleanor Roosevelt got up and said, I think it's very unfair for Senator McCarthy to do what he's doing. Adlai Stevenson got up and made the same kind of statement. FDR got up and said, many of the communists are some of my best friends. But the FBI caught him, found him guilty. J. Dexter White, Assistant Treasurer of the United States. McCarthy says he's a communist. Eleanor Roosevelt said, that's unfair. Adlai Stevenson, that's unfair. FBI found them guilty, caught them in the act. The Supreme Court found them guilty. Did Mrs. Roosevelt's name go down? No. Did Adlai Stevenson's name go down? No. He ran for president. Who went down? Senator McCarthy. Lies. And then what did they do? Do away with anti-communist oath. You are now allowed to work in security positions and they can't even ask if you're a communist, which advocates the violent overthrow of the U.S. government. You don't go in Russia and get a job advocating the violent throw of Russia. We allow communists to speak at universities. They weaken the CIA and the FBI by abusing them and accusing them. They've been our strongest forces for anti-communism. Exchange scientific data with the Russians, sell to Russia, accept the Red Chinese and aid them. I was listening the other day, and they were saying, I'm going to stop here shortly, but not too shortly. They were asking them, there came a debate between different positions. And this party says, we are against world communism. That's where your force is. This man who came back from Russia, how do I pronounce his name? Starts with S. Solzhenitsyn came back from Russia. His position is, we are not against Russian communism, we're against world communism, which means communism in every country, because that's where your problem is. And there's some others that take that stand. But then the Nixon administration, the Kennedy administration, and the Reagan administration, unfortunately, are taking the position, no, we're against Russian communism, because Russia and China are against each other, so we've got to help China out. And I saw the debate of these particular men. And the man who, one who's in office, the present position of the office in the United States, the one that's been there aiding China, says, well, I'll have to agree that Solzhenitsyn presented an airtight case. I'll also have to agree that it's possible that China will turn on the United States and go to Russia. He said, we'll have to admit that is a possibility. It's a risk we take. However, history has shown this and this and this, and we really don't think it's going to come to pass. And because Russia's giving us a bad problem, we think we should use China. We think it's helping us. Based on history, but you know, that history may be a setup. And all you got to do is really know the nature of those beasts. You don't get the devil going to aid the Christians against another devil. You're going to find that the two demons, they may fight each other, but they'll join when they have a common enemy called capitalism and Christianity. And then they'll divide, then they'll fight over the pie after they get it, maybe. But don't trust one to fight the other with you. What else is first world government? I'll talk about a few of these things after I come back. I want to read some current events. I want to bring some more scriptures. I won't be able to get through it all today. We'll take a break right now. The mothers may pick up their children. Music ministry may take the platform.